Welcome, everybody, to the Sun on the Strip podcast. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun. If you have joined me for this podcast before, thanks for coming back. You already know that I like to talk about what's going on the Strip and give you an interview with a Las Vegas entertainer or personality. Started this podcast about a year and a half ago and still going strong through all the changes, ups and downs, even through the pandemic. If you have never listened to this podcast before, thanks for discovering it and giving it a shot. So in March, when the Strip was shut down due to the health crisis, I took a week off from this podcast, and then I started doing it in a different way, doing two shows a week, two different conversations with somebody in Vegas that you want to hear from. And I've been doing it that way ever since, and now I'm changing gears once again. We're going back to a once-a-week Sun on the Strip podcast to be released every Wednesday. I'm going to try to have another compelling interview every week, but I'm also going to try to throw in a little bit of news. So this week, I have a really great conversation with Chris Angel. Before we get to that, let's talk about what's happening on the Strip right now. So I'm recording this on Tuesday, May 19th. And it's all about parking. The last couple days, people have been maybe celebrating that free parking probably is coming back to the Strip. MGM Resorts International announced on social media on Monday this week that it was going to restore free parking in all of its resort garages upon reopening. Now, that won't necessarily apply to in the future when there's big events at T-Mobile Arena or concerts or football games or New Year's Eve, of course, what have you. A special event fee may still apply. And then on Tuesday, the Cosmopolitan on its website also announced that it would no longer charge to park in the garage on a regular basis. This is not a surprising development by any means. There's been a whole lot of talk ever since everything shut down that when the resorts do reopen, they're going to have to do things in a lot of different ways to attract the drive-in visitor from Southern California and other surrounding states. We know that's going to be the first group of people to come back to Las Vegas once these resorts are open, once the Strip starts opening up again. So we may see, and by the time you listen to this, maybe someone, some other resort company will have announced that it's going back to free parking too. Caesars Entertainment is really the other big company that was charging for parking and has multiple resorts on and off the Strip. Wynn had started charging and then changed and gone back to free parking. The Venetian and Palazzo had never charged for parking. Treasure Island was still free. Circus was still free. So, or we might not see any announcements. It might just be, maybe Caesar's Palace waits until it actually opens to release that information. We'll see how it continues to develop. Also, on Tuesday, the Venetian announced that it was planning to open on June 1st, and it is taking hotel reservations for stays starting on that date. June 1, the hotel's reservation department was shut down previously. There wasn't like a hopeful date until now. The governor hasn't said anything about when casinos can open. So this is maybe not surprising, but it's definitely not carved in stone. Most people assume that local casinos like Stations Casinos in the suburban areas might be the first to reopen before Strip resorts, but Las Vegas Sands, the parent company of the Venetian and Palazzo, did not indicate whether it had received information or confirmation that the state plans to lift the closure order by June 1. It did say that Venetian would be opening first and then Palazzo would join it at a later date. If you want to check up on stories like these, you definitely need to go to lasvegassun.com. So slowly but surely, we're getting to the point where casinos on the Strip are going to open again. We still don't know when shows will return to the Strip. it's assumed that it won't be until later in the summer when some live entertainment options could return in a different form. And we'll see how that goes. I wrote a big story for Las Vegas Weekly last week about some trends that could emerge when live entertainment does return to Las Vegas. You can go read that at lasvegasweekly.com. Absolutely every entertainer in Las Vegas is excited to get back on stage, and Chris Angel is no different. I got to talk to him a few days ago on the phone, and we discussed some of the things that he might do when he does get to open his Mind Freak show again at Planet Hollywood. It was doing really well, selling a lot of tickets in the early part of this year before the shutdown occurred. We also talked about Siegfried and Roy and the passing of Roy Horn and how big of an impact that iconic magic act had on Chris coming to Las Vegas and creating his own show here and just, you know, inspiring him and giving him something to aim for. That was a really big deal. He spent a lot of time with Siegfried and Roy over the years. So you get to hear about that. And we also talked about what he did last week, which was a huge gift from his Johnny Christopher Children's Charitable Foundation to the local organization Cure for the Kids, Angels Foundation, the core group Caesars Entertainment, Base Entertainment, and Woodland Scenics combined for more than $250,000 in donations to the families in need fighting a pediatric cancer diagnosis and spending time at Cure for the Kids. So that is incredible, and that is how we're going to start our conversation with Chris Angel.
First of all, on behalf of everybody, really, thank you for this incredible contribution to Cure for the Kids and all of those amazing families that will benefit from this gift. This is really, really remarkable.
Well, I'm honored and grateful to be able to do this, and I believe that's, you know, why I've been so blessed with success is for the greater good of children and people that are in need. And this is just one thing that the Johnny Christopher Children's Charitable Foundation is doing, and there's more events planned in the future.
Yeah, you've been involved with Cure for the Kids for a long time now, right? Do you want to kind of talk about that organization a little bit for people who might not know all the great services they provide?
Well, Cure for the Kids is amazing. I've been working with Cure for the Kids for years now. They provide the only outpatient pediatric cancer treatment in Las Vegas that I'm aware of that takes care of children that have insurance, that don't have insurance, or that are underinsured. And my son, Johnny Christopher, has been also going to Cure for the Kids. And has been now for some time. He's actually there every single day last week and this week. And we've become very close with the staff and the folks that are there and some of the families that have their children there. So this really hit home, and it's why we felt it was a real call for action to try to do something to alleviate the pressure that a lot of these families are having. Because if you consider pediatric cancer, you know, by itself is a big threat. It's battling life and death every day that these children have to go through the treatment and have to try to recover and get well and get through, you know, their diagnosis. But if you consider that we've all been practicing social distancing and hand sanitizing and sanitizing areas, I've been doing that with my family, Chenille, and our family since Johnny was diagnosed. Now people understand what it's like, but it's a triple threat for these families because, you know, they not only have to deal with the vulnerability of pediatric cancer, but now they have to deal with, you know, having the COVID-19 virus that can be a deadly virus for children that have an immune system that's compromised, on top of the fact that, you know, now parents are laid off of work. They're trying to figure out how to put food on the table. So it's like three concerns. How do I take care of my kid, you know, with pediatric cancer? How do I protect them even more so now in this hypersensitive world with COVID-19? And then, And then how do I put food on a table? And it's been a triple threat. So that's why we felt it was really necessary to call, to take action and to do something on behalf of these families and these children that are, that should just be worrying about their treatment, not everything else.
For sure. That's just, I mean, that's just an overwhelming situation to deal with for any family, of course. And we're so lucky in Las Vegas that there's organizations like this that are taking care of our most vulnerable families, especially in times like these, and generous people who are fueling that effort all the time.
It's what I get out of it is far greater than what I give. The feeling of giving is just a beautiful thing, and the people that have joined forces, you know, everything from the core group to Cisco to Woodland Scenic to Walder's Trains, incredible, and Caesars and Base Entertainment, to not only supply the necessity of food for these families, but to create something to look forward for, an entertainment, which we're giving 1,000 tickets away to these families and to the first responders that are there on the front lines. We wanted to give something to kind of have an escape, look forward to. So when my show, Mind Freak, opens back up in Vegas, they're going to have 1,000 tickets to come see the show. And we're going to create a beautiful attraction thanks to Woodland Scenics and Walder's for these great train layout that will really showcase a 4x8 world that kids can get lost in while they're waiting for the treatment in the waiting room. They'll be able to actually conduct the train and have it go into tunnels and do all sorts of things. My studio is my team, who are incredible, are building this. And we're just trying to attack it, not only for the physical needs of these families and these first responders, but also to have some optimism, something to look forward for that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. It's important to be able to incorporate that positivity. Yeah. Where did the idea for the train set come from? Is that is Johnny Christopher a fan of trains? Are you a fan of trains? How did that come about?
Well, we're all laughing as I'm sitting here working on Johnny Christopher's train right now. It's something we started out with. I had a little passion for trains back in 2000 and I want to say 5 or 6 when I moved in to the hotel that I lived in, and we built a little train set. And my son Johnny Christopher wanted a slot track, and I combined a slot track with a train, an O-scale train set that I used to have, and then wanted to create a whole entire world going from the city into the countryside. And so we were getting into this, and essentially Woodland Scenics, who is like the premier company for scenic landscapes in trains and stuff like that, stepped up, and I used a lot of their products exclusively, said we want to help out and do a display for Cure for the Kids. And this is something that we might do for other pediatric cancer hospitals as well, because my studio actually, you know, takes all of the materials and fabricates it. And if you saw the detail in what we're creating, it's pretty extraordinary, and a credit to my incredibly talented team. But the kids will get lost in this, and it's a great way to escape when you're sitting there to get, you know, chemo or a blood transfusion or a spinal tap, to kind of pass the time, have something to look forward for while you're there at the clinic. And some of these kids, I bet you, will look forward to go there because of the train set. So it kind of, it gives something positive in a difficult, trying, during a difficult, trying time for these kids.
Obviously, your show, like all shows, put on hold during this pandemic. And that's, I'm sure, been difficult, but the world of Vegas entertainment, and particularly of magic, suffered a greater challenge, or obviously a tragic situation, when Roy Horn passed away recently. You posted a really touching tribute to Roy on social media. Can you share some of your experiences with Siegfried and Roy through the years, and just how much of an impact they had on you?
Well, look, if there were no Siegfried and Roy, there'd be no David Copperfield, there'd be no Penn and Teller, and there'd be no Chris Angel. They're the ones who led the way, transformed Las Vegas into what it was, into a world that families could come to. And they have become, you know, an institution because of what their contributions have been to Magic and to Las Vegas. And they changed the trajectory as we knew it when they opened up and did what they did at the Stardust. And then they went to the Mirage. You know, it was just they changed the game. And really, that's why Cirque du Soleil was born, you know, in Las Vegas with Steve Wynn, who had a winner in Siegfried and Roy, and then saw the possibility of how entertainment that's unique and different can drive people and engage people. But Siegfried and Roy have had a profound effect, not only in Magic. They transcend Magic, and they were Magic in the world, the popular world. And, you know, on a personal note, Siegfried and Roy were just amazing to me and very generous to me, because when I was trying to come up in the 90s and I would come to Las Vegas and I'd see this show, no one knew who the hell I was. I wasn't successful in any way. I was trying to become successful, trying to live the dream. And I was inspired by Siegfried and Roy, seeing the billboards, imagining what their life was like, seeing their shows. They would have me come in anytime I wanted to, and gave me tickets to come see the show with my mom and my brothers and my friends, and I would see the show myself countless times. I was so inspired and blown away. Then they would meet me after the show and talk to me. They would encourage me. They would watch videos of mine. And then they gave me this incredible quote, and that I remembered because it was so amazing and it meant so much to me and still does to this day. I still have the facts that they sent to me back in New York that had the quote, and it said, "Greatness is he who reminds you of no other. Such a man is Chris Angel." And it said Siegfried and Roy. And that was in the 90s they sent that to me. And so they were always very helpful. They set up meetings for me with their manager, Bernie Human, who we had lunch together back in the day at the Mirage. And they set up a meeting. It's how I met Kenneth Feld, who's become a friend of mine, who was at my opening of my show here. So really, they were incredibly generous with their time and their advice. And they didn't have to be, because no one knew who I was. They just saw, I guess, a diamond in a rough, and they were just trying to help me and guide me. And they were just incredible. You know, in our community, they have done so much with the canine unit, with Lynette, trying to help out our first responders. They've just been, you know, really a class act. And I'm just so grateful to have experienced their show and to know them personally. I have many different things that were given to me that they had, and I really cherish them very, very much, and I cherish my memories even more because I was able to have that experience and that interaction with them on a personal level, so it was beautiful. And by the way, they were at the Help events. Like, they came when I had Jerry Lewis and I had Siegfried and Roy and Mike Tyson and Imagine Dragons. When I raised $1 million in one night for pediatric cancer, Siegfried and Roy showed up, and they didn't show up for a lot of things, but they showed up for this event, which really, really touched my heart and meant so much to me because they thought it was important enough to do.
Yeah, it really became a rare experience in recent years when Siegfried and Roy would make an appearance at an event, yeah, or a gala or whatever. There were only so many times that happened. So
I have a funny story. So there was something called the World Magic Seminar, or the Desert Magic Seminar back in the day. And Siegfried and Roy were being honored. And so I was there doing a speech about Siegfried and Roy, and they were both sitting there. And at the time, I used to have this diamond necklace. It was a pair of handcuffs. And I did my speech. Lance was there, and I got done speaking. And Roy, he loved my handcuffs, and I'll never forget it. He like wanted to see them, so I took my handcuffs off, and he put it on him, and he didn't want to give them back to me. He was playing with me. He didn't want to give me back my handcuff chain. And it was just a cute little bit. And we have a great picture backstage of that event. I'll never forget it. And, you know, so he was a jokester, and, you know, that camaraderie and that tension that Siegfried and Roy, had, was really, really, something that was very entertaining. And they were always trying to like kind of one up each other. It was real playful, real fun. And it made me, really comfortable because they were just like having fun.
That's funny to think of them that way and think of Roy that way because, well, for me, my family moved to Las Vegas right before I started the sixth grade, and I was taking the bus to school for the first time in my life, and our bus route went past one of their homes in Las Vegas, and it
right.
had the big S and R on the gate, and it had the roof that looked like it was covered in snow. It was just this crazy Disneyland kind of place. And every time the bus would drive past, we would all jump up to the windows to see if we could see a tiger running around in the yard or something. Of course, that never happened. But they were like superheroes. And they
led a life that was a fantasy. Like, I know that my perception before I was successful in the 90s, when I used to come see Siegfried and Roy and see their billboards and see their commercials on the tram, it was just an absolute fantasy, like that I had in my head of what their life must be. You know, they get dropped off in a Rolls Royce, they sip champagne, and they do this incredible, spectacular, sophisticated show, and they get off stage and they have parties and it was this whole fantasy. And then I was blessed enough to get a show. And even though I got a Rolls Royce because of Siegfried and Roy, I never end up using it because it wasn't that life at all. It was just all about hard work and about remaining the most relevant at your craft and working harder than everybody else. And so I kind of learned that as I got to know them. And I remember asking Siegfried, I was at Lance Burton's house and we were hanging out, and I said, Siegfried, why do you, because this is before the action, I said, this is after the action, I'm sorry. And I said to him, do you miss performing? And he says, I love this time because I make my own decisions. I do what I want to do. I feel free. But when I asked him that same question back in the 90s, he said, I've been on the nicest beaches in the world, and the stage is my life. And I remember the pre-Siegfried and then the post-Siegfried. And it was kind of, you know, interesting to see the transformation, because sometimes when you do, you know, like I was doing 500 and something shows a year, you become a hamster in a wheel. And even though people's perception of your life is a fantasy and, oh my God, I wish I was him. I wish I could, you know, have that money and that fame and have that gig. And you, when you do it so much, you realize that it's not what people's, you know, anticipation is at all. It's quite to the contrary. And so it was very interesting and a reality check for me when Siegfried said that to me, because I, you know, felt that way sometimes when I was doing so many shows a year. And that's why when I went to Planet Hollywood with Mindfreak, I just said, you know what, I want to do less shows. I want to appreciate every show. I want to look forward to every show. And it was a game changer for me. And that was something that, even though Siegfried didn't realize how profound what he said was, it really was. And it meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And he always used to say, listen to the audience. Siegfried and Roy would say, listen to the audience. They'll tell you what they love and they'll tell you what they don't like. Just listen to the audience. And it's really so true.
And you have done that. The last time that we spoke, we were backstage at your show at Planet Hollywood, and you really kind of found your rhythm after it. You've gone through the first year of shows there. You've made some changes, kind of streamlined things a little bit, and seemed like you were real happy with how things were going right before this pandemic came in.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, even during the last week of the pandemic, while other magic shows were on house seats, we were in the 90s, like, as far as occupancy. It was absolutely incredible. And I remember Bass, who has, many shows and knows people, chose people coming to me saying, hey, it's a tough week. And I was like, huh? I was like, no, we're like, this has been an incredible week for us. And we had to cancel our Sunday show, and we would have been in the 90s. So it's been really, really, such an incredible story for me personally, coming from almost, over 10 years previous, and then coming with Planet Hollywood, this production of Mind Freak, and getting it dialed in, and then a reality check, time to reset, and here's a moment. But, we can't be negative, even though it's a very, very difficult situation. So many people, I think almost 30 million people have lost their jobs. It's terrifying, but, we're still in the moment. And when you have your health, you can get out of any situation. You just have to stay optimistic. The human spirit is resilient. Las Vegas, which has probably been hit in some ways, the economy the hardest, because we rely on tourism, we're going to be resilient. And I think, obviously it's going to be a reset, but I think when we come back, it's going to take some time, but when we come back, I think we're going to come back with a vengeance. And I also think if you look at history during times of war or depression, entertainment always thrives because people want the opportunity to escape. And I think Vegas is the perfect escape for people to have. And I think it's just a matter of time. And I think we can redefine the moment how we go forward. And I think we can really grow from this. I really do. And I'm optimistic that we will.
Do you think that this thing will cause any longer term changes to your show? I'm not talking about the whatever temporary things we have to do to get things open again. I mean beyond that, when you're able to do everything that you want to do, do you think that you'll take a different approach because of all this?
Well, here's my honest, transparent view. I mean, obviously COVID-19 is a highly contagious virus. Obviously, it's claimed the lives of way too many people. But so does the flu, so does suicide, so does so many other cancer, heart disease, pediatric cancer. One child every 2 minutes is diagnosed with cancer. So we have to keep things in the realm, because there's a lot of things that have taken a lot of people's lives way beyond the COVID-19 virus so far, because we are doing what we need to do. So I think there has to be a transition, obviously, to go from where we are now, being responsible, opening shows, opening casinos, opening restaurants. We need to be responsible. We need to practice social distancing. We need to do the things that are a necessity to keep ourselves and others safe. But I also think, too, in time, things will go back to normalcy. I know there's a lot of talk about, shaking hands or not shaking hands or permanently wearing masks and whatever. Mm-hmm. I think people, by and large, need love. I really do. And I think human contact, is a necessity, like for your family and for the people that you love. I just don't see it changing, forever. I just think that, look, there's going to be a lot of businesses, sadly, that are not going to make it. There's going to be a lot of shows that will never come back. And, it's going to have to be how creative and how you can rethink, how you do what you do and how to maintain competitive in the marketplace, no matter what goes on. But for me, obviously, in my show, even, you know, in the last weeks of my show, I changed a lot of the creative to practice social distancing. Mm-hmm. I even put a rubber glove on and made it part of the show and made it funny, and didn't do some of the things that I did. So I will do those changes as we need to keep the audience safe, to keep my cast and crew safe and myself safe, because you have to remember I have a son that I come home to and he has an immune system that's compromised. So I have to mm-hmm. really be hyper-focused on that. But I think eventually, you know, I think eventually, you know, we're going to go back to a sense of normalcy. And maybe there'll be slight changes. It'll be a new normalcy. But I think for the most part, the human spirit and the human nature is resilient. And I think people, especially coming to Vegas, are in a different mindset. And I think they come to Vegas to escape their reality. And I think, you know, I just don't see them practicing all of these things all of the time. I think I don't know. It's going to be an interesting time to watch and to see. But we certainly have to be responsible and do what's right.
Well, one thing we know for sure is there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand for Vegas-style entertainment. So when we do get to do things again, it's going to be pretty amazing. What else do you want to say to all your fans who can't wait to see you on stage again?
I can't wait to be on stage again. You know, I have been taking this moment, which is, you know, a very difficult time for our country, for the world. And I've been trying to make it positive. You know, I've been spending lots of time with my family, my kids, doing things that I have not done in 20 plus years. And because we're never going to get this opportunity again, I don't think. And to have this time and to make the most of it, because we're never guaranteed the next moment. We're only guaranteed the second that we're in. And life can change as we know it, just like it did with the COVID-19. If somebody would have said, hey, Vegas is going to be closed for a day, you'd laugh at them. We've been into it now for how many weeks, you know, months. Mm-hmm. So you can never take anything for granted. And so for me, it's never to take the ones that I love and my family for granted and what's really important. And everything else is secondary in a sense. And so I've been hyper-focused on, you know, spending that time with my family and trying to create these incredible memories, because life is but the memories you create for others to remember, so that, you know, I can at least have something really positive come out of this. But my goal is to get back to work and to entertain audiences like I've never entertained them before. I'm itching to get back on stage. I'm working on many different ideas and different creative concepts right now. And my goal is to get back the very first moment that Caesar says, you can go, I'm there. And obviously, we'll be very responsible, very safe, and keep our audiences safe. And I'd also like to say, if people would like to donate to help, they can do so at chrisangelhelp.com. And 100% of every single cent that I raise goes to research and treatment and to do things like this. I don't take a penny for any expense, any overhead, any administration costs. 100% of every cent is used for charity. So people can be assured that every cent that they donate will go to good use, like it is tomorrow, you know, for these families and these kids that are struggling.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to go find past episodes, you can do that at lasvegassun.com/podcasts, or you can listen and subscribe to the Sun on the Strip at Apple Podcasts. Take care. Have a great week.